Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, February 13th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as two guests join me on this hump day edition of the show. We start things off with Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper at huntersportspicks.com and also daily contributor to bangthebook.com, where I do our first of two handicapping the hardwood segments for this week. The second one coming up, of course, on Friday here, where I chat a little bit about last night's two big games, Duke-Louisville, LSU-Kentucky, take a look at the SWAC, then look at some games coming up here for the rest of the week. And then with Wes in the second half of today's show, we'll chat some more college basketball with him, then also take a look at the Genesis Open, this week's PGA Tour event over at Riviera Country Club. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Our writers are doing a phenomenal job covering all the sports that are in action right now: NBA, college basketball, NHL, soccer, tennis, golf, NASCAR starts this weekend as well. A lot of great content going up over there on a daily basis. Make sure that you head over there and check it out, including Kyle's daily college basketball picks piece, Parker Michaels' daily NHL piece, then all of the videos we have over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. Kyle will have one of those coming up here today for tomorrow's college basketball card. He'll also have one Friday for Saturday's college basketball card. And I do daily videos on the weekdays over there as well. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We start things off with Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
It's going all right. Kind of a tough weather day around here, as it is a lot of times in Ohio in February. But can hear that wind howling outside. Not ideal, but, you know, spring's not too far away.
Spring not too far away. As I mentioned on yesterday's show, you know, spring training, pitchers and catchers reporting for a lot of teams. Position players will start reporting here later in the week. So really looking forward to our MLB content coming up at bangthebook.com as well, including my MLB betting guide, which I'm hard at work on. You know, whenever I get the time to do that with everything else that's still going on here. But Kyle, last night, man, you know, I sent you a text at halftime of the Duke versus Louisville game, and I said, Chris Mack can effing coach. And then the second half happened. What a disastrous collapse from the Louisville Cardinals.
Yeah, I still think Chris Mack's a really good coach. I think that, you know, he is doing a lot with the amount of talent he has there this year. And nobody thought that Louisville would be as good as they are this season. I mean, if you can take away that 12-minute span, 14-minute span, whatever it was, where – they just played terrible basketball last night. I guess it was really only about 9 minutes. They were up 59-36 with 9:15 left in the game. So, you know, really turnovers were the big problem. Christian Cunningham had 6 by himself. They had 17 turnovers in the game. I think 13 of those 17 were in the second half, something like that. They can't handle presses very well. If you look at their long-term stats for the year, they've struggled with presses. Duke switches into that zone press. I think you have to give Coach K credit for switching things up and playing zone. I know he doesn't like to do that very often unless he has to, but we know Coach K is a great coach. Switching it up really worked for them. I think that Louisville had some really careless possessions up, you know, about 20 points or so with 7-6 minutes left. Those are the type of things that can really end up hurting you badly when you're playing an elite team like Duke. You know, if you waste 3 or 4 possessions in a row where they could have been using up some time, they throw the ball away or take a bad shot quickly. And then Duke goes down, hits some shots quickly, gets a couple steals, and before you know it, it's a game again. And, you know, the end of that game was really something because, you know, Louisville, you know, that Chris Mack badly wanted to call a timeout. They had burned all their timeouts, and not having any timeout at the end of that game really hurt them. You know, this is a team that badly needed a break and talk to, and they couldn't get it. I thought it was also interesting that, you know, the block charge call, with it looking like it was going to be a charge and then getting switched to the block with the review, which, you know, his foot was inside the restricted area. That was another blow for Louisville. And I remember thinking last night, gosh, if you have Louisville plus 8, whatever you got, you really don't want this to go into overtime, because this looked like one of those overtimes that would have been a boat race.
Well, and here's the question. You know, I mean, we talk about trying to evaluate what these games and what these wins mean for teams. Does this say more about Louisville and just, you know, what Chris Mack has to work with, and the fact that we talk about this all the time, you know, you have to learn how to win. That's one of the biggest growing pains for a team, learning how to win. They learned how to cover. They didn't learn how to win. So does this say more about the current state of Louisville, or does this say more about just how damn terrifying this Duke team is, that they can erase a deficit like that and just completely out-talent a team for so long that they make up 25 points or so, you know, in 6 minutes and change?
I think it says more about Duke. I really do. I think that, you know, Louisville, I still think I know what Louisville is. You know, they're a quality team that's very well coached, that can beat anybody. Look, I mean, they already went on the road and beat North Carolina by 21 points. So, I mean, Louisville has had some good performances this year. They won at Seton Hall. You know, they've got some pretty good performances on the slate so far this season. Obviously, they lost to Kentucky at home by 13, and then they lost at home to North Carolina by 10. Certainly, they're not really consistent at being elite. I don't think that anybody really thinks this Louisville team is elite, but they're a quality team. Duke, I mean, they're scary good when they're locked in like that. You know, everybody talks about Zion Williamson, and he deserves it. You know, he's a great player. There are a lot of really good players on this Duke team. You know, I've said this before. Look at the other freshmen there at Duke. R.J. Barrett is very good. He had a bad night last night. Cam Reddish hit some shots there at the end that were key. Trey Jones, really, really good defender. He was a big part of that win based on some of the steals and what he was doing in that press. This Duke team is very good. You know, they're a young team. That's what the knock on them would be in the NCAA tournament. But nobody's more talented than Duke.
All right, so as we go forward here for Louisville, I mean, now what? You know, you had a chance at a signature win in Chris Mack's first year on your home floor, you know, the first blackout in Yum Center history, and that's what happens. So now what for Louisville?
Yeah, it's really, really hard spot here for Louisville going forward. They just lost in overtime at Florida State, 80-75, the game before this. Then fairly quick turnaround, they come back to play Duke. Huge game, like you said, the blackout. You lose it in this fashion. It's not like they just lost the game. The way they lost it matters. And now they play Clemson at home, at Syracuse, home against Virginia. And they also have to play on the road against Virginia before the end of the season also. So they have a tough schedule left. I would not back Louisville in the next game. I wouldn't back them in the next couple games. I'm not saying I'm going to straight fade them either. I think Louisville will probably be favored by 6 points, 5.5, 6 points against Clemson. It depends on what Clemson does here in their game before that. But the odds makers are probably going to shade this one toward Clemson a little bit, because this is a really, really bad spot for them coming up on Saturday. I couldn't take Louisville in that game. The only thing I could take would be Clemson, but you know, this is going to tell us a lot about Chris Mack. I mean, we know he's a good coach. If he gets them right off the mat and they come back and cover the next couple games, I'm going to be really impressed.
All right, so the other big story from last night in the college basketball world, and there were quite a few of them. I mean, Penn State knocking off Michigan was a pretty big story too. LSU and Kentucky. I mean, that thing looked to be in the cylinder, apparently not reviewable. I, for the life of me, don't know why. There's a review for everything else in every other sports league, but you can't review that one. Kentucky can't dwell on it for too long, though.
No, I mean, Kentucky has that huge game against Tennessee this weekend. That's going to be a massive game. I think we'll talk about that one on Friday. I actually made some notes about it and then realized that I was going to be back on Friday and thought, oh, we'll talk about it on Friday. But, you know, this is a Kentucky team that had been playing some tremendous basketball. Very good defensively. They weren't as good defensively last night as they have been. 1.12 points per possession for LSU. And I think you could say that LSU played well enough to win in that game, regardless of the call. I will say, you know, obviously if you're a Kentucky fan, and if I was a Kentucky fan, I'd be upset the way the game ended. I don't blame them a bit for that. You know, but at the same time, LSU was right there the whole time. They were up two, a foul there on a 1-1. Kentucky hits both shots, and then that's how it ends. I hate it that it ends that way, you know, just as a college basketball fan. Like you said, it doesn't really make sense what you can review and what you can't. You know, they'll probably end up changing this one, and I heard Calipari say that last night. They'll probably end up changing this one at one point now, but it's not going to help Kentucky for this game. At the same time, you know, Kentucky had been winning quite a few games in a row here, quite a few close games. They had that close win at Auburn, close win at Mississippi State where they almost blew a lead. You know, maybe this is good for them. Maybe it's a little bit of a wake-up call. We're going to find out what they're made of this coming weekend against Tennessee. Tennessee's been playing very well. On LSU's side, you know, can LSU keep that kind of momentum and keep playing with that same fire that they had last night? I mean, they needed overtime to beat Missouri at Missouri just a few games ago. They've had three overtime wins here in the last, 10, 12 games. LSU has been winning a lot of close games here. You could say that, you know, they're due for some regression, or you could say that they're good at pulling out the close wins, but LSU plays Tennessee at home also next Saturday. So they've got some interesting games coming up as well. They still have to play Florida twice. Florida's definitely not what they should be, but interesting games there. I want to see if LSU can continue that kind of basketball that they played last night, because LSU is certainly a very talented team, and they're kind of putting it together better than what I thought they would this season.
Well, and that was going to be my, you know, three-part question here is, was that just a quintessential look-ahead spot for Kentucky? Are there flaws about Kentucky, or is LSU just a pretty good team?
Well, I think LSU is a pretty good team. I think Kentucky still has some question marks on offense, though. I mean, if you watch Kentucky run offense, they can get bogged down sometimes. Really good offensive rebounding team, but if the other team is getting a decent amount of defensive rebounds, they could be in trouble. Last night they got 15 offensive rebounds and still struggled. I mean, they only had, 1.09 points per possession. Pretty solid, but you know, if you don't get 15 offensive rebounds, it'd be hard to score 2 months. They only get to 71 as it is. So I think their concern is on the offensive end. I'm not concerned about Kentucky on defense. Very solid defense, quite a few shot blockers down there. This Kentucky team just needs to be better at running the half-court offense, and we'll see if they can do that. And I think this weekend is going to be a great test for that.
All right, so we go from a couple of marquee games last night to talking about one of the lowest of the low majors that we can talk about. And these are really the last ones that we haven't gotten to yet. Leagues like the Big South, the MEAC, the SWAC, and the Southland. We'll try to cover those on some of our upcoming segments here. I believe we're doing the Big South on Friday. So you can definitely look forward to that. But these are conferences that, you know, weren't traditionally lined in the regular season up until this year. So we get to conference tournament time, and we'd all sort of be scrambling to figure out what these teams have actually done, what their resumes look like. But this year, the SWAC has been ranked on, or has been lined, on a regular basis, Kyle.
Yeah, those are the extra games now. Those extra games are being lined usually the morning of. I think Five Dimes put some lines out the night before, but those are always minus 120 juice. I wouldn't suggest taking minus 120 juice on anything. I think that you're laying minus 120, you're hurting your win percentage quite a bit, because obviously then you got to win a lot more than what you do when it's minus 110. And it's hard enough at 110, so I don't suggest taking the minus 120 lines. But this is the SWAC conference, a much different conference than many of the others we've talked about. First of all, it's a weekly, no doubt. There's 72 and 98 ATS in the last 170 non-conference games. So these were usually, you know, SWAC teams were getting lined only in the games against marquee opponents. Now we have lines in the games against each other. I don't have data to go back and say, you know, SWAC teams, how they've done, underdogs and favorites, because there haven't been lines on it. But I think it's important to point out how much difference there is in this conference compared to some of the others, where we've talked about the Big Sky, the Summit League, things like that. They're well known for offensive efficiency. The SWAC is full of inefficient offenses. These offenses can really, really struggle. These teams play hard on both ends, but they have a lot of turnovers, very poor shooting percentages. A couple examples here. Only two teams in the SWAC have a turnover percentage lower than 20%. And only two teams in the league shoot better than 33.9% from three-point range. For comparison's sake here, in the Big Sky that we talked about recently, only one team turns it over at more than 20% on offense. So the SWAC, almost everybody does. The Big Sky, only one team. Then you look at the Summit League, where well-known for good shooting, poor defense. No team in the Summit League shoots worse than 36% from three-point range. And like I said, only two teams in the SWAC shoot better than 33.9% from three-point range. So it's something to keep in mind when you're handicapping SWAC games here going forward that, you know, if you're trying to use any kind of numbers to come up with a total, be really careful about blindly putting on, you know, 1 point per possession or 1.05 points per possession. I certainly think it's a good idea usually to, you know, use that with efficiency numbers as far as, you know, figuring out pace, efficiency, like I said, when you get to a total. Just know that when you're doing that in SWAC that, you know, 0.95, 0.96 are going to be a lot more common than 1.10 like they would in other conferences. So that's the biggest thing about the SWAC.
Well, and a big thing to keep in mind here about the SWAC is that, you know, there are some significant strength of schedule discrepancies here. Somebody like Texas Southern plays a ridiculously hard schedule year in and year out. That's something that they're accustomed to doing. They'll play a lot of road games in a row early on in the year. Then they come into conference play, generally wind up looking pretty good. But as you look at this conference here, the top SWAC team, according to Bart Torvik, in terms of national rank, 241st. That's Prairie View A&M. Top SWAC team for KenPom, Texas Southern, 204th. A lot of that having to do with their non-conference strength of schedule and just how good that was. But we really are talking about one of the lowest of the low majors here. So how do you sort of rank these teams in your power ratings?
Yeah, I've got Texas Southern first, and this was a hard one, honestly. You know, when you talk about Texas Southern versus Prairie View A&M, I think you could make a case for either one of them being the top team in the league. Prairie View is 9-1 in the league, Texas Southern 7-3 in the league. So just in league play, Prairie View has been better. Texas Southern's really good win so far this year meant quite a bit to me, though. Winning at Baylor, winning at Oregon, also winning at Texas A&M. Not that Texas A&M is very good, but that's three really good wins for a SWAC team. So, that has to factor into the equation. I will say Texas Southern, if you look at their numbers on the year, they've gotten pretty fortunate on free throw defense, which obviously, is a sign of possible regression at only 65.1% that their opponents are shooting. Texas Southern did just beat Prairie View in the last game here, 95-90 this past weekend. They lost on the road 79-73 to Prairie View. That game was really close the entire way. Prairie View outscored by 5 points in the last 10 minutes and then won by six. And then in this game here the other night, Prairie View had a lead, a big lead, 71-50 in the second half. Texas Southern comes back and wins 95-90. So these two teams are very evenly matched. The thing that stands out to me about both of these teams is they're both really experienced teams. Texas Southern, the fifth most experienced team in the country. Prairie View A&M, the 10th most experienced team in the country. So, experience matters here. Both of those teams have it. And then I think that Grambling, I would put third, the best defense in the league. You know, there's always room for a team with really good defense to, you know, have a chance. I think this Grambling team is certainly one that could make noise in the conference tournament. They're only giving up 0.877 points per possession in the conference. In the nation overall, they're 13th in effective field goal percentage defense. So Dante Jackson's team plays some really good defense. I have to say, I think it's a really big drop off after those three teams. So I would be surprised if anyone other than those three teams wins the SWAC tournament. Big drop off down to Alabama State. I put them fourth. They have the number one non-conference schedule in the country, and that means quite a bit to me. Number five, Jackson State. Jackson State is a team that I've had some success playing unders with because they play at so much slower tempo than everybody else in this conference. Really try to slow the game down. As long as they're not losing by a good amount, they're going to use up more than 20 seconds of the shot clock almost every possession. Arkansas Pine Bluff, 6. They have a really good player in McKnight. He's possible. He can really carry them, but doesn't have that much help around him. I have 7th Southern, 8th Alabama A&M, 9th Alcorn State, 10th Mississippi Valley State. And I will say Mississippi Valley State is one of those examples of an experienced team, but they've been bad every year. So is experience always a good thing? We've talked about this in college football. You know, people say returning starters is so important. I mean, well, if they're good, it's important. But if they've been bad every year, it doesn't help you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are some angles that we can look at here come conference tournament time. Prairie View A&M, the top team in conference in both turnover percentage offensively and defensively. Alabama State, 3rd in both categories. So maybe those are a couple of teams that we can look at during conference tournaments outside of Texas Southern, who, you know, will be the favorite and will likely be the most popular bet on the board here for the SWAC. But, hey, you know what? We always like to give the low majors a little bit of love here on the show. And like I said, we'll do that with the Big South here coming up on Friday. Let's get to a positive regression team, and as fate would have it, we're going to another small conference here with the Atlantic Sun.
Yeah, another Atlantic Sun team. North Florida, their offense, they've faced the 57th toughest slate of defenses so far this year. They've faced some really weak defenses down the stretch. I think pushing pace the way that they have been and getting more efficient on offense, now they're not good on defense, so I'm primarily saying I think that North Florida's overs have some value going forward because North Florida is not good on defense, pushing the pace consistently, have faced a lot of good defenses. I think they're going to score quite a few points as we go forward here.
The North Florida Ospreys. I remember sweating the A-Sun Conference Tournament a couple of years ago. Maybe it was 3 or 4 years ago now. I had them at like plus 850 or plus 900, something like that, to win the conference tournament. And I was so enamored with this team watching, you know, some of the streams that were out there online with them that I just never bothered hedging it. And, of course, they wound up losing in the championship game. But, hey, it was a fun ride nonetheless.
I think I remember that year, yeah. North Florida, a team that is similar to what they've been here in the last few years. I mean, they're not very good defensively. They're better offensively than it looks like, though, I think. So let's see if they have some higher scoring games going forward. The negative side when it comes to regression, Ohio State's offense. Look, everybody knows I'm an Ohio State fan, but calling it like I see it, I think Ohio State's offense is really not that good. They face only the 36th toughest slate of defenses, which is really not very good for a Big Ten team. You know, the Big Ten, very good this year, very deep. I think Holtman's a really good coach, and this team has a lot of potential in the future, but I think they're a little bit overvalued right now. As I watch Ohio State, I'm certainly concerned with their turnovers. You know, I'm surprised more teams don't press them. It looks like a winning strategy to me. You know, their guard play, their guards can shoot it, but their guards haven't been very good at handling the ball. And I think Ohio State's offense is a little bit overvalued at this point. I would look to either go against Ohio State or play some unders with Ohio State going forward.
What was up with Ohio State last Sunday playing Indiana to 59 possessions?
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State seems to be, you know, trying to slow the game down, but when they play against a team that plays fast, they sometimes play to the other team's tempo. So, you know, that was certainly surprising to me that it would be that slow. You know, Ohio State, if you look at them throughout the conference, they'd had a lot of games that were in the mid-60s as far as tempo. Then they have a 60 against Rutgers at home, and then 71 against Penn State at home, and then 59. So they're certainly not consistent. But like I said, I do think that their offense is a little bit overvalued. You know, anytime you're turning the ball over as much as they are, they're turning it over 21.2% of the time in conference play. You know, if you're not hitting your shots, you're going to have a pretty low total. So I think that you could find some values here with Ohio State unders in the future.
All right, so let's look at some games here. And, you know, as Kyle said, he's coming back on the show on Friday, so we'll be able to talk some more about some of the weekend matchups here on that Friday segment. But we start with a real good one here in the Ohio Valley Conference. between Murray State and Austin Peay.
Yeah, I love it when we get to talk about the OVC. It's a good under-the-radar conference, one that I've had some success in the past. Look, everybody knows about Morant from Murray State at this point. Some of his dunks are ridiculous, and just him as a player in general, he's a tremendous player. His assist rate's first in the country. So, you know, nobody's doing it better than him, first in the country, according to KenPom. So Murray State is a team that's been really, really efficient on offense in this league. 1.17 points per possession. Defensively, they're second in the league. You look at Austin Peay, they weren't really supposed to be this good. You know, they've been really well coached by Figure. This is a guy that I believe he's just in his second year here. He's just in his second year here. Did a solid job getting them to 19 and 15 last year after they were 11 and 19 before he took over. And now a big jump to 18 and 7. A pretty experienced team, pretty deep team. And Austin Peay, I've been surprised how efficient they've been on offense this year. I figured they'd be decent on defense. They force a lot of turnovers, but they're 1.142 points per possession, so not really that far behind Murray State. This is a really interesting game. Austin Peay got beaten up by them badly twice last year. One of the games was particularly ugly. You know, does that mean they don't match up well with Murray State? Does that mean that this Austin Peay team is just quite a bit better and they'll have a solid chance here? I think Austin Peay is definitely better than they were last year. Murray State, you know, like I said, Morant is tremendous. The rest of their team is solid as well. Murray State has two losses in the league. One was at home against Belmont. Morant got hurt at the beginning of that game and played through an injury the rest of the way. Then they lost by 20 at Jacksonville State. They've been a little bit shaky in some of these road games, though. They only won by 10 against SIU Edwardsville, not a very good team on the road. Only won by 4 against Tennessee Tech on the road. I think I like Austin Peay a little bit in this one. I think I might like the over as well. I think both teams will play pretty quickly, both teams efficient on offense. I think we'll get some open shots here. If you get a low 150s total, I think I like the over.
Matt Figure, as you mentioned, it is his second year. One of the branches of the Frank Martin coaching tree there, Kansas State and South Carolina. So a guy that, you know, was the recruiting director there. And, you know, this is always an important thing to consider, too, is looking at the teams that make a big stride from year one to year two with a new head coach. You definitely want to file those away in the back of your minds, because you would certainly think, as long as there's not significant roster turnover here, and it does look like there are quite a few seniors on this Austin Peay roster, that, you know, maybe in year three, this is a team that really, really takes that next step forward. But, yeah, I like this game. I like this conference, actually. I think the OVC is a really interesting conference for a variety of different reasons, because you get these matchups when, you know, Belmont's playing Murray State, or, you know, Austin Peay's in there. Jacksonville State's had some good years as well. But these are really high-quality, very competitive college basketball games. And, you know, this is a low major I don't think gets enough love.
Yeah, I agree. I've always enjoyed talking about it when we get to conference tournament time. You know, I think this is an interesting conference, too, because you have three teams tied at 10-2. Everybody figured Murray State and Belmont would be there. Like I said, Jacksonville State would have been the other favorite in this league. Austin Peay is up there at 10-2. And then you have the fifth-place team is Eastern Illinois at 6-6. So you've got a bunch of teams down there at 3-9 and 4-8. And then you've got these top teams certainly a fairly top-heavy league with, you know, four teams that probably legitimately have a chance at winning it in the conference tournament. But, you know, conference tournaments can have some strange results, and that's why they're so fun to talk about also.
All right, so we move to the Colonial Athletic Association here. Hofstra is a team that we've talked about a little bit on the show here lately. Had a pretty big one tomorrow night against College of Charleston.
Yeah, I like this game quite a bit. Hofstra has been very good this season. If you look at who the preseason favorites were in this league, it was Northeastern and College of Charleston here. I think that this is a pretty good spot for Charleston. Hofstra has been playing almost exclusively zone. They've switched over to that this year. It's worked out for them. This Charleston offense, though, has been really good against zone so far this year. I looked at the splits last night. 49.8% field goal percentage from the floor against a zone defense. So Charleston has done very well against zone defenses. You could argue that maybe this is a better zone defense than what they've played in some of those other games, but I think that Charleston is a better team than they've shown through a lot of this season. They've also played quite a bit tougher schedule than Hofstra has. Hofstra's only played the 326 toughest as far as strength of schedule, according to Ken Pom, so far this year. Like I said, I think this might be a kind of a buy-low spot for College of Charleston, because you have a team here that I think is better than what they've played. They've underachieved a little bit this year. They have some really good veteran players. Hofstra's played really well. There's no way Charleston's going to overlook this game. So I think you get a really strong effort from them here. And, I mean, what are they going to be? Maybe favored by a point or so? That's what it looks like most people are projecting here. If Charleston's favored by a point, I like Charleston in this game. I think that, you know, if you're getting a really small number like that, I like their chances of winning a game like this. Hofstra rolling along in the league with only one loss. Charleston, you know, a bit of a chip on their shoulder for the fact that they really haven't been good enough compared to what they should have been in the league this year. I think this is a good spot for Charleston.
All right, we stay with the low major theme here, and let's go out to the WAC. You know, we talked about the WAC a little bit on last week's shows. I had UT Rio Grande Valley as one of my favorite plays in my Thursday three-pack video on YouTube last week. Not only did they cover the 11, they won the game outright. So we go back to the WAC here again, but this time to talk about Utah Valley and New Mexico State.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting spot here because you got New Mexico State off two really hard-fought wins in a row on the road, Bakersfield and Grand Canyon. That Grand Canyon game was really impressive. Grand Canyon, a tremendous home court advantage. Those fans get really fired up for those games down there. It's fun to watch some of the Grand Canyon games. I think this is a letdown spot for New Mexico State. Utah Valley's a solid team, certainly not as good as New Mexico State. The question is, how many points are we going to be getting here? Can we get maybe 9, 10 points? If we can get double digits, I think Utah Valley might be a good look. I think it'll probably be about 9 points in this one. Utah Valley's a solid offense. Pope has been known as a solid offensive coach. If you look at Utah Valley, in transition, they've not been very good at all. But in the half court, they're very efficient, very, very efficient in the half court. New Mexico State's defense been very good all year, but they've been especially good at cutting down teams that are very good in transition, according to Synergy. So this is a half-court team in Utah Valley. I think Utah Valley can finally score in this game. And if you look at New Mexico State's offense, they're pretty good, but they're not excellent on offense. They're not really a team that, you know, can pull away with great shooting that often. I think, you know, if you just look at the spot, you have to like Utah Valley. And I'll say that Utah Valley hasn't been very good on the road this year, so maybe not, you know, the perfect team to back in this spot, but I think it is a good spot to go against New Mexico State based on their last two games.
I like it a lot. And in fact, you know, I recorded a weekend look ahead video on YouTube here this morning, and I was looking at it. I'll probably be back on the Vaqueros again on Saturday, UT Rio Grande Valley. They play Utah Valley here. So on Saturday, so a very, very tough, you know, road trip here for Utah Valley. And, you know, again, hopefully, my hope would be that, you know, this game plays out the way that you are kind of insinuating here, where Utah Valley keeps this close, hangs around, easily covers the number. Then maybe I look to go against them on Saturday, you know, in something of a letdown spot for them there in that role. So I love talking about games like this and circling spots and, you know, those real low major conferences. It's a lot of fun for me and definitely something I'm very happy that we're able to do on these Handicapping the Hardwood segments. One more game to touch on here, this one in the MAC, so a little bit higher profile, and certainly one of these teams much higher profile. Buffalo battles it out with Toledo this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Friday night game. It's you know, a game where Buffalo absolutely blew out Toledo in the first game. It was 110-80, and actually it was worse than that. They were up 38 points with 4 minutes left. Let off the gas a little bit there. Buffalo made 15 out of 33s. Jeremy Harris had 6 threes. Nick Perkins had 4. Toledo decided to run with them in that game, and I think that was a mistake. I want to see if they do that again. That game was played to a pace of 82 possessions. I mean, that's exactly what Buffalo wants. Toledo on the year has averaged 67.6 possessions. Toledo at home here, certainly a big revenge spot. I mean, You lose 110-80, you're going to remember that. So what's Toledo going to do in this game? They're 20-4. They've had a really solid season. They just won at Bowling Green, their rival. So, sometimes you can think the next game would be a bad spot after beating a rival, but they've got to be up for a game like this. I mean, they can't have a letdown against Buffalo, can they? I mean, if they get beat here, it's just because they're not as good. The spot favors Toledo. Buffalo just played on Tuesday. Toledo has the week to get ready for this game. I'm real curious to see what this line will be also. I think Buffalo has to be favored on the road here, maybe like 2 or 2.5 points. What can Toledo do in that second game? Toledo's defense has been very good this year compared to past seasons. They're not quite as good on offense, so they've been a good under team this year. I certainly wouldn't want to take the under in this game because they didn't prove that they could slow down Buffalo. I do want to see if they can slow the pace of the game, though. I think that's the key here. Can Toledo get there? Buffalo is just going to get running again.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting spot. And also, too, I would probably look to fade Toledo next Tuesday at Eastern Michigan, where they'll be laying a short road number. That looks like a big-time letdown spot after Bowling Green and Buffalo. But, yeah, I'm curious to see how Buffalo fares in this spot, because they didn't really get tested a ton in the MAC last year. This year, they're getting some tests and playing some close games. Want to see what they do here in this one, to be sure. Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com, also doing the daily piece for us at bangthebook.com. What's going on over at your website right now, Kyle?
I lowered the prices on the college basketball season pass again. We're getting toward, we're not really that far away from March Madness even. So I think it's 31, 32 days away. So, it's been a really good college basketball season. You can check out all my premium packages over there. 76-50 so far this year, so just a touch over 60%. Certainly don't promise to keep hitting that rate. I always try to be totally transparent. There's going to be streaks and slumps, but college basketball is something that I've done very well in the long term. So you can check out all the packages over there at huntersportspicks.com. And also, if you haven't already, please sign up for that free picks newsletter over there at huntersportspicks.com. And check out the daily article for Bang the Book. I know there's quite a few people doing that, and certainly appreciate everybody reading that and commenting. It's been a lot of feedback on that, so thanks for checking that out on a daily basis as well.
Well, like I mentioned, Kyle will have a video today for tomorrow's slate of games, then also on Friday for Saturday's slate of games over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com, at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much, brother. I'll talk to you again on Friday.
All right, sounds good. Talk to you then.
There's Kyle Hunter again, huntersportspicks.com, daily at bangthebook.com, at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. We got one more guest here for this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Good morning, Adam. I'm doing all right. How about yourself, sir?
Doing well, buddy. Appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. And, as I was kind of talking through that previous segment with Kyle and as I was sort of looking at yesterday's slate of college basketball games, a lot of really good games. And we saw some really good teams either get tripped up or come very close to it. Obviously, Duke, down 23 in the second half, whether they won the game or not, not a great performance from them. Michigan getting beat by Penn State, a Penn State team that I think had, one Big Ten win coming into that game. So it's just kind of that time of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, when you're getting so many big games, now that we're in February and now that, football essentially is over, putting the AAF aside, all these guys that have been knee-deep in football are now kind of entering into this college basketball market. And, you're getting to the point where there's some conference championships about to be decided, even before you get to the conference tournament. And a lot of these games get put, they're so important, especially when you have two good teams playing each other. And then you get some of these spots where you get a team like a Penn State who's been struggling and only had one Big Ten win, but they had been competitive in a lot of these games. They just didn't have enough to get over the hump in a lot of them. But you had to kind of think at some point there's going to be a spot that's going to be right. And Penn, even with, when they've had some of their lower teams or whether they've had some of their better teams, they're always kind of an underdog. It's a tough place to win. It's one of the toughest jobs, I think, in the conference in the Big Ten. But they always trip somebody up. They always beat a Michigan State. They always beat some kind of big boy. And you're getting a lot of these spots that are happening where you've got these games against lower teams before you play a big team. I mean, there's kind of one tonight with South Carolina and Tennessee. Tennessee knows with Kentucky losing last night that that team's going to be ready for them. It's college game day. Tennessee goes into Rupp Arena as the number one team in the country. And now they get a South Carolina team who they ended up beating by 22 on the road. But the game was a little bit closer than that until about the final 10 minutes when South Carolina kind of ran out of gas. And, you know, and you're seeing a little bit of movement toward the South Carolina side, which I agree with, because I think this is kind of a tough spot for Tennessee.
Well, and as you look up and down the board here a little bit, you know, as you mentioned, South Carolina down from plus 17 into the plus 14.5 range now. Bet Online and Bookmaker, a lot of 15s still out there. But even yesterday, you know, the game between Marquette and DePaul, you know, DePaul was taking some sharp money early in the day. They're down from 4 to 3. You know, obviously, you know, you're going to have to pay attention to the, excuse me. You have to pay attention to the scale of the line moves based on where the spread is. But, you know, it seems like it just kind of is that time of the year. So do you sort of bet with that in mind, or are you, you know, really looking to take advantage of the spot plays that are out there?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a little bit of both where you're looking at some of those spots. And, you know, obviously with spot plays, nothing hits 100%. There's a lot of things that look like good spots, like DePaul, I thought was a good spot. And last night, and, you know, Marquette, credit to them. That shows me a lot about their team, that they can go into a tricky spot like that and win and cover pretty easily. But, I mean, you know, some of these teams, especially as you get into the, you know, later in the season, I think these teams are still trying, you know, but some of these teams also know that their only chance is to win the conference tournament. So maybe they're going to focus on that a little bit more and just kind of trying some things out and, you know, working within that framework to try to, you know, see what they can maybe pull off in a conference tournament, especially in these one bid leagues.
Well, and it's always interesting too, in the one bid leagues here at this time of the year, like Liberty and Lipscomb play each other again tonight. And that was a pretty interesting game the first time around. You know, those are very clearly the two best teams in the Atlantic Sun Conference. You know, that's a litmus test game for you now at this time of the year. And there are certain advantages to seeding when it comes to conference tournaments, but also you kind of look at it and say, you know, for two teams that are in a one bid league that are clearly the class of it, you know, how much of an effort do they put forth in some of their remaining conference games? That could be an angle here as well.
Yeah, this is that game you mentioned specifically is even more interesting because it's probably not going to happen. You know, you're going to hear this term as you watch television, eye test, but the committee doesn't use an eye test, which sometimes you kind of wish they did and looked at more basketball. And I mean, yeah, Lipscomb, you know, they're going to put them how many, you know, wins they have in the top 50, how many quadrant one wins. But if you watch this Lipscomb team, I mean, they're rated, I think, 33rd in the KenPom. They're 20-4. This is a team that's good enough to be an at-large team. This is a team that could knock some power conference teams off. I mean, they've already won it. They won at TCU. They won at SMU. They played a very close game at Louisville. Two of their losses are to Belmont, who's another pretty good team in a likely one-bid league conference in the OVC. Fortunate that some of these conferences are one-bid leagues because a team like Lipscomb is certainly good enough. And you know, Liberty isn't a bad team, and they got waxed at home by this team. I mean, you got a Liberty team that's already 21-5, and we're not even to mid-February. You know, I think these two teams, I mean, clearly this is going to decide the conference championship, I think, in the regular season, especially tonight, with one team being 11-0 and Liberty being 10-1, and then the next best team is NJIT at 6-4 in the league. So this is essentially the regular season title for that league on the line tonight.
Well, and if Lipscomb wins this game, I think we may run into a betting angle that you really like to look at a lot, something I think makes a lot of sense here at this time of the year and may sort of creep in or factor into what we talked about at the top of the segment with, these really good teams kind of having these flat spots, these letdown spots. If Lipscomb wins tonight, I do think that they kind of fall into that fat and happy mentality that you like to talk about. Explain what that means to our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, and I usually, you know, use it a little bit for more of ranked teams, but, you know, these teams that win three or more in a row to their ranked teams, and I mean, then the market adjusts to them accordingly. Now, I don't believe that Lipscomb is going to be ranked. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm sure they're probably in that also receiving votes category. But, you know, they win tonight, and then they go face Kennesaw State on the road, I believe, on Saturday, and a team that they beat by 29 at home back in January, and 2-8 in the league, that, you know, they're going to be laying well over double digits to this team. And, you know, when you're a beast in one of these small conferences and you're clearly the best team, and Lipscomb would certainly qualify, I guess, in that category in the A-Sun, you're the everybody's game of the year, because you got a chance with a disappointing season to knock off the conference champion. So you know that even though you have an underdog that's an inferior team, you know that you're at least going to get an honest effort out of that underdog. And that's what I think you're always looking for. So, you know, I mean, you know, you're just looking for those spots, and then Lipscomb, you know, could potentially really clinch the title tonight, regular and the one seed in the A-Sun tournament. You know, how hard are they going to really be going at Kennesaw State on Saturday?
So in terms of the major conference teams here, with that, you know, fat and happy sort of angle, are there any teams that you feel like fit that criteria right now that you may look to go against, you know, here this week or this weekend?
Well, I mentioned the one tonight with going against Tennessee, taking South Carolina. Another one than maybe, and a lot of these have actually worked out a little bit more in the first half than maybe they have the full game, because the teams kind of fall apart a little bit. And I mean, and you still got to be a little bit in the second half, but you still got to be a little bit picky. I mean, if you're looking at like what Gonzaga is doing in the WCC, I mean, they just blew out San Francisco and St. Mary's, who are two pretty quality teams. I mean, I think clearly, you know, number two and three in the league, and, you know, Gonzaga really ran them out. And so with some of these non-Power Six conferences, you do have to be, I guess, a little bit careful. I mean, there's not a ton of these spots tonight. I mean, maybe Wake Forest in the first half against Florida State, who comes off that big comeback win over Louisville, who really should have won their last two games, blew the lead, the 23-point lead to Duke last night, and also blew a game at Tallahassee on Saturday. So they may be a team you want to go against in their next time out. But, you know, you're seeing some of these teams tomorrow. Houston could be a team maybe to go against. They just beat Cincinnati. They look like they're pretty much in control right now in the American Athletic Conference. And then they go to a UConn team that's been a little bit disappointing, that's 13-11, got some injuries with Jalen Adams out. But maybe this is a game where they really step up. So, you know, that could be a team to go against. You know, a lot of these teams that have won several in a row, you know, some you got to pick your spots. Again, like Gonzaga is playing at Loyola Marymount tonight, a Loyola Marymount team that's 17-8. So, you know, maybe going against the Zags at home on this streak isn't a good idea, but you can maybe find a spot on the road where they get a tougher game than anticipated.
Now, one more game I want to ask you about here, and then we'll transition over to golf for a few minutes. Did Purdue fall into that trap last night? I mean, their 18 points in the second half really took me by surprise. Was that sort of a fat and happy type of thing, or was that just, you know, maybe the pressures of starting out a little bit slow and then having to get back into the race, get back into the equation?
It was a little bit of both. I mean, and I think you've had a Purdue team that's clearly, I think, exceeded expectations. I mean, I think the demise was maybe a little bit exaggerated, because I think Purdue has a strong program culture where they weren't going to all of a sudden, even though they lost four senior starters, they weren't all of a sudden going to be like 10th in the league and be down there with Northwestern and Rutgers. But I think it's clearly a surprise that they were leading the conference. And you know, they were also playing a pretty good team. I didn't understand, you know, I thought the line should have been maybe around pick and stayed there when it opened. But when you saw Purdue get to about minus three, it's like, hey, this Maryland team's got some dudes. They're as athletic and as talented as almost anybody in the conference. And I just thought that that was a really tricky spot. But you saw Purdue got off to a strong start, and then Maryland put the clamps on them. And, I mean, only held them when I was looking through the scores, only held them to 18 points in the second half. And, I mean, I think that that was kind of a tricky spot for Purdue when you've got a team that maybe didn't expect this prosperity and didn't expect to, I think, be the number one team in the conference. Then all of a sudden, the pressure, I think, does get to them. I mean, when you're a Duke and you have superior talent, you expect that you're going to get the team's best effort every single night, and you expect it to be where you are. But maybe when you're a Purdue, you didn't necessarily expect that. So I think they did get caught up in that.
All right, so we move over to the golf side here, talk about something a little bit different. But, man, what a field here on hand at Riviera Country Club for the Genesis Open. DJ, JT, Rory, DeChambeau, Rahm, Watson, who's a three-time winner here. Matsuyama's taking some love this week. Lefty just won last week at Pebble Beach. Schauffele, Spieth, Finau, Woods. This is, out, you know, you're missing Ricky Fowler and Jason Day, but outside of that, I mean, this is a who's who type of field.
Yeah, this is really a loaded field. And then obviously, you know, that man Tiger Woods is in the field, but he has not had a lot of success. It's one of the few places he hasn't had a lot of success at. But yeah, I think that this is a really, really elite field. It's in a big market. It's in Los Angeles. It's a ball striker's course. It's a course for shot shapers where all different types of players win. Driving distance obviously helps. You've seen bombers win here, the Bubba Watsons and the Dustin Johnsons. But you've seen ball strikers win here, the Steve Strickers and the Bill Hazes. So, you know, this is a course that I really like this because I think it rewards creativity. You know, and there are so many different ways to course where it's not just, okay, driver, pitching wedge, putt, you know, where it's not those long courses where length is always the determining factor. This is a course where a lot of different type of guys can win.
Well, and this is a challenging course because of that, because it does take some creativity. So it's really not a big surprise at all that somebody like Bubba Watson has played well here. Phil Mickelson, he's played well here. You know, a couple of guys that are really creative shot makers with their second shots. And, you know, obviously sometimes around the green as well, they do some different types of things. So tell us about Riviera outside of, you know, it being a course that, you know, does reward creativity, does work for a lot of different types of players. What else are we looking at here with this par 71 that is pretty long at 7,300 yards?
Yeah. And it was a redesign by Tom Fazio, and some of the redesigns that he's had a part in include Quail Hollow, where the Wells Fargo Championship is held, a couple U.S. Open venues with Marion, Oakmont, Conway Farms, where you've seen some BMW championships held. You know, the greens, Bentgrass, Poa-Nua, and Kikuyu Fairways, you know, similar surfaces to what the guys saw in Torrey Pines a couple weeks ago. So, that led me to a couple guys that played well, and one of them you've already mentioned, Matsuyama, fourth year in 2015. I think he really fits this course in terms of his ball striking, and I think he'll like this putting surface, and that's always the bugaboo with Matsuyama, his putting. Same one where he played well at Torrey Pines a few weeks ago, and going back to that event, he was sixth in the field in strokes gained and approach the green, third in strokes gained tee to green. So, the ball striking's obviously there, and he's got to knock down a couple putts. A couple guys, you know, a little bit down the board, maybe from the favorites in the 10 to 15 to 1 range that I looked at. Also played Tony Finau and Patrick Cantlay. These guys were actually the co-first round leaders here last year and ended up both shooting three of their four rounds in the 60s last year. Finau was second, Cantlay was fourth. Cantlay took off last week, was one of the many withdrawals from Pebble Beach because I think these guys, I don't think it was an injury. I think it was these guys saw that weather and weren't sure how the course was going to be because, you know, they saw it was pretty waterlogged. Now, the weather didn't end up playing much of a factor, but I think they kind of saw that and begged off and decided to maybe give it a go this week. So I'm not all that weary of taking Cantlay necessarily here. And another angle that I like for Cantlay, the 2012 NCAA championship was held here at Riviera. It was actually won by Thomas Peters when he was at University of Illinois. He's playing over in the Perth event on the European Tour this week. But there are five guys in the field that were in the top in that event in 2012. Patrick Cantlay and Justin Thomas, obviously the two main class players. Max Homa, who's a guy that played at Cal, came off the web.com, got his card back this year. And then a couple guys that I took, if you like maybe some bombs to take for top tens, if you don't want to bet the win, Keith Mitchell and Patrick Rogers, who are both at about 201, were also top 10 here. So, you know, you'll find some guys, even with this class of the field, and even with this many chalky elite players in the field, you will find some guys, I think, that will finish on that first page of the leaderboard Sunday that are longer shots, and I think those two could fit the bill.
I really do like that list of names. I noticed one that you posted on Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one that you didn't mention, Adam Scott. And another guy that's played really well here is Kevin Na. So it looks like also, too, if you're a guy that can get into a groove with the flat stick, this is a course where you can put up some numbers as well.
Yeah, and I did play Adam Scott. He's former winner here, was second here in 2016. And, you know, he's fallen off, I mean, from when he was a top five or top ten player. But I saw some encouraging signs. Didn't make the cut at Pebble Beach, but I kind of throw that out because that's such a unique event with the pro-am portion and playing three different courses, the 3 days. I don't put too much weight into how you did at Pebble Beach the week before. Go back to Torrey Pines, where he was on the first page of the leaderboard. First in the field in strokes gained approaching the green, fourth in shots gained tee to green. And like Matsuyama, the bugaboo with Scott has always been his putting. And I don't think, you know, he probably hasn't fully recovered from that anchor ban, you know, because he used that long putter against his body. And, you know, they changed the rule for that. But, you know, I saw some encouraging signs from Scott at Torrey Pines. And he's a guy still with one of the sweetest swings in the entire game. And I think he's a guy that may be getting a little bit overlooked here with the quality of the field.
One other thing I want to ask you about here, away from this event, you know, we're leaving California next week. We got the WGC Mexico Championship, then the alternate event for the guys who aren't in the WGC, the Puerto Rico Open. Then it's basically the Florida swing. Honda, Arnold Palmer, players. You know, so then we get into the Florida swing, where we talk about the desert swing and the California swing. A lot of guys tend to play really well there. Now we go to Florida. A lot of guys tend to play really well down in the Southeast and some of those more coastal courses. So, you know, how much of that factors into it, the mental side here for these guys of knowing, hey, I'm a good California player, now we're leaving. Or, hey, I'm a good Florida player, I can't wait to get down there. How much of that factors into it for you at this time of the year as we start looking ahead to that road to the Masters?
It did a little bit for me because, you know, I actually considered in terms of one of the shorter prices, I considered Rory McIlroy, and there's some people I respect that kind of like him this week. Rory has always been, I think, a better Florida player than he's been. And I think he's coming close to winning again, but he's always been a better Florida guy than a California guy. And, you know, when you look, he's won at the Honda before, and then you start to get the Bay Hill, you start to get to the Players, you start to get to Tampa Bay at the Valspar. You know, I think, you know, you see some guys and then, you know, there's the correlations that you make. Some guys are better at putting on Bermuda, you know, like a Russell Henley or those type of players than maybe they are on Bet Grass and Poa-Nua. And I mean, you just look at those different correlations and, you know, I think there's some guys that are going to be excited. I'll be interested to see who skips the Mexico event last week and then maybe just goes straight to Florida for a week off to prepare for a busier than usual swing with the Players' Championship being moved back to March since the PGA is now in May this year. So, you know, that I do take that into a little bit of account because, I mean, there are some guys that just, you know, I think kind of thrive in March in Florida and as you kind of get down to that home stretch for the Masters.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I kind of wonder about that. We talk a lot about situational capping in a lot of other sports, and it seems like there's, to a degree, you know, some level of situational handicapping here in golf, in the sense that, you know, some guys may be using some early season tournaments to, yeah, get a paycheck, but also to try and, you know, round into form for the two WGC events coming up in the next 5 weeks. You've got the Masters. Then a month later, you've got the PGA. Month later, the U.S. Open. Guys, you know, they still want to win. They still want, you know, that million-dollar purse. But also, there are things they want to work on in, you know, actual, for lack of a better term, game conditions.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's thrown off the schedule totally this year. I mean, you're not seeing as – you're seeing a lot of these European guys be over here a lot earlier this year. And I think the good events really on the European Tour, the Desert Swing aside, have kind of been back-ended with the Open Championship being the last major of the year, and that's in July. And then, of course, as you get to the Race to Dubai in the fall, I mean, so you're seeing these fields, I think, be a lot stronger with you know, Rory and Justin Rose and, you know, a lot of the top-flight European players, Tyrrell Hatton, Noren, Cabrera Bayo, playing over here a lot earlier this year, because I think that they know that the big tournaments are so front-ended this year.
Wes Reynolds, it's always a treat, man. At Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Appreciate the time as always, buddy. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
You bet, Adam. Looking forward to it.
There you go. There's Wes Reynolds again, at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Really like, I do really like talking that golf stuff here on the program. I think it has, you know, some handicapping advantages too that will, you know, leak over into other sports betting markets, but also, you know, it's not a market you're going to hear too many shows like ours talking about. So I pride myself on being able to do some horse racing stuff, work in a little bit of NASCAR, work in some golf, along with the other obvious major markets that are out there. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat some college basketball with Brad Powers, at Brad Powers, the number 7 on Twitter. We'll also see if there's any new college football stuff in his world. And then in the second part of tomorrow's show, we'll chat with Tony George of Doc Sports about the NBA, with the All-Star break starting for pretty much everybody, for most teams here tonight. And then obviously starting after tomorrow's games for everyone else. We'll talk about handicapping coming out of the All-Star break, then also chat some college hoops with him. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I will talk to you again tomorrow.